This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. On Wednesday, Wisconsin Supreme Court struck down the state's Safer at Home order, effectively removing most statewide orders concerning the coronavirus lockdown. The ruling has caused a lot of confusion. Some bars opened almost immediately after the ruling, despite, in some cases, local Safer at Home orders already in place. Since then, municipalities around the state have been scrambling to clarify or create their own Safer at Home orders. There remains a lot of uncertainty about what the state Supreme Court's ruling really means for people living in different communities. Paul Nolet is an expert on constitutional law and American politics. He's an associate professor and chair of the Department of Political Science at Marquette University. He joins Lake Effect's Joy Powers to talk about the ruling and unpack what it means for Wisconsinites.
So this ruling has led to a lot of confusion. Let's start by unpacking exactly what the Supreme Court ruling has really done here.
Right. So to back up, this was a case that was brought by the legislature, and their basic argument was that the Secretary of Public Health, Andrea Palm, exceeded her authority when she issued the Safer at Home order, which built upon Governor Evers' original order back in March. And in this case, the court indeed, on a 4-3 vote, said that she had exceeded her powers. So essentially what that means is that that Safer at Home order, except as applied to schools, which was the one exception that the court made, that Safer at Home order is now no more. So the basic idea here is that individual communities, counties, cities, towns, they have the ability to have their own orders dealing with COVID-19. However, if the administration statewide wants to do anything about this, they have to work with the legislature to have any sort of new replacement for Safer at Home.
Well, and that's something that I found personally confusing. So counties, mayors, individual municipalities, they have the power to make these decisions, but the state's Department of Health Services, they don't?
I mean, it is kind of odd, practically speaking, right? Because we're talking about a pandemic. The virus doesn't know the town lines or city and county lines. So one might expect that a statewide response would be the most appropriate. But legally speaking, at least, because the court said that the state had exceeded its powers, it was limited to that issue. So it didn't address, for instance, whether Milwaukee or Dane County, whether those Safer at Home orders are exceeding their authority. Because it was focused on the state health department, this particular case, that's why only the statewide Safer at Home order was at issue here. So it still leaves that room for localities to take steps to address COVID-19.
Okay. And something that I think has been confusing in the reporting about this, and just how we've talked about it in general, a lot of people are attributing the ruling to essentially curbing the governor's power to make these orders, but it seems like it has more to do with the Department of Health Services.
Yes, that's correct. So this actually does not have to do with Governor Evers' original order, which was issued early on back in March when, you know, a number of states, not just Wisconsin, were taking the initial actions to address this. This has to do with the order that was issued in April by Andrea Palm, who's the Secretary of the Department of Health Services. And that's relevant here because the case, and actually the majority even started with this at the very beginning of their opinion, they noted this was not about the governor's power. This was about the power of the Department of Health Services and by extension, the secretary. So it was more limited than simply saying, you know, all statewide actions are off the books, because that actually would go beyond what the case actually did. This was more limited towards the April action, the Safer at Home order. And like I mentioned before, it also doesn't apply to schools. That was an exception that the court made in their decision.
Okay. So a lot of people have compared this pandemic in general to what we've seen in the past, specifically the Spanish flu epidemic in 1918. You know, I've read some reporting about this that said Wisconsin was very quick to act, and part of how they did that was at the state level making these broad orders. So when we look at previous orders that have been statewide concerning public health, how does this ruling compare to what we've seen in the past?
It's unusual. It's unusual both here in Wisconsin and then when you look at the actions of other states during the Spanish flu in 1918 and also other pandemics in the late 19th century, for instance, early 20th century. Generally speaking, states have quite broad powers to address emergencies such as this. Those powers collectively are known as police powers, and they're aimed at protecting the health, safety, and welfare of the residents of the state. And those powers are broad and really undefined. And generally speaking, looking back in the past, both state and federal courts have given states and their police powers quite a bit of room to deal with pandemics, similar to this one. So to have a court step in and say, well, actually, the public health department can't enforce any laws to address the pandemic, that's unusual looking back at the previous governmental actions to address issues like this.
To some extent, it feels counterintuitive because they are the, you know, the people who are in charge of public health in the state. You would imagine that a pandemic would give them some leeway as it has in the past. What was the state's rationale for overturning the Safer at Home order?
Yeah, so interestingly enough, I mean, a lot of the political debate about Safer at Home and similar types of actions that you see in other states, there's been a number of protests against this and such. And a lot of that has to do with what you might say constitutional issues. So basic issues of liberty, freedom, and then on the other hand, public safety. But this was actually not a constitutional case. So the majority opinion, at least some of the concurring justices did, but the majority opinion did not dive into that basic balance between liberty and public health. It was really, if you read the opinion, it's actually reads quite legalistically, because the basic argument here, or the basic dispute, was whether Andrea Palm's order was in fact an order or it was a rule. So it was that legal question. And the whole reason why that is important here is that if it was deemed an order, then the Department of Health Services could act in an emergency manner on its own. However, if it was deemed a rule, it would have to go through the typical process for making rules in the state. And there was some talk even in the opinion about how that would probably take at least, you know, 12 days, a couple weeks to go through the typical rulemaking process, which involves the legislature. So that was really the main point of contention here. But even though it sounds legalistic, it had a lot of impact because, again, it specified how much of an emergency action the department could take on its own as opposed to involving other branches of government like the legislature.
So essentially, if I'm hearing you correctly, the state Supreme Court said you have to slow down this process during an emergency at a time when days really mean a lot.
Yes.
As to the spread of this disease.
Right. And I mean, this is the response by Governor Evers and the Department of Health Services to say, well, that doesn't make any sense to have to go through this cumbersome process, which is typically meant for your, you know, normal everyday rules that might apply statewide. This is an emergency situation. It's an unusual situation, and it requires quick action. You know, the pandemic is not going to just wait around for 2 weeks for the regulatory process to continue. And so I think that's the response to say, look, you know, the legislature in the past had enacted public health statutes specifically for this reason, to give emergency powers to the department to address pandemics like this that have come up before in the state. And the three dissenters in the case certainly brought that point up several times, but it didn't convince the majority. The majority decided, no, this was a rule that needed to go through the typical process. Because that didn't happen, it doesn't have the force of law. And if any replacement occurs for Safer at Home, then the administration, the department, is going to have to go through the legislature.
Well, and I guess the question that I have looking at this is, did the majority consider public health and safety at all, or were they really just more concerned with kind of, you know, the minute kind of details of these rules and orders at a time when they, of course, are meeting virtually because of their own safety?
Right. So I think the response from the majority might say, look, you know, we're not saying anything about whether this public health order or rule is a good rule or a bad rule. We're not in the business of making these policy decisions. We're just interpreting the law. And we interpret this to be a rule, and the statutes indicate that you have to have a rulemaking process. Of course, the response to that is to bring up some of the points you just mentioned. Number one, you get a sense of how serious of an emergency it is when the court itself has to adjust its procedures pretty dramatically to have oral arguments over Zoom and not meet in person and that sort of thing, which obviously is very unusual for the court to take that step. And also it does read very legalistically. You know, I mentioned if the whole decision, including all the dissents, is 161 pages, so it's pretty lengthy. But if you read the majority opinion, it's almost like you don't get a sense that there is an emergency. I mean, it is a very legalistic majority opinion that talks about the distinction between rules and orders and the standing to sue of the parties and those sorts of issues. And so one response to this is to say, isn't this just all besides the point when we're struggling with a public health emergency that affects the entire state? So that really is the dynamic that I think is going on here.
It feels from the outside very much like watching them on this virtual conference call. It feels very much like safety for me, but not for thee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean I think it does appear to that way to a lot of people in the state and outside the state. And now that the court has made its decision, it's going to have to. You know, it's going to have to deal with that blowback, I think, against the institution. Unlike federal courts, you know, state courts, state Supreme Court justices are elected. One of the things that the majority mentioned here, and I think some of the concurring justices, was really emphasizing that Andrea Palm in the Department of Health Services was an unelected official. So I think in some ways they were perhaps trying to insulate themselves, saying, look, we actually do have some authority from the people here, since we are in fact elected, whereas the Secretary of the Department of Health Services does not. Now, I don't think that necessarily, you know, addresses all of the concerns about the new process for me, but not for thee issue, but that did seem to be a big thread that weaved through the majority opinion. And I wonder if part of that was to really emphasize the point that actually the court has a closer connection with the voters of the state than, say, the Secretary of the Department of Health Services.
You know, as you mentioned, there were, of course, two written dissents from the justices, including actually conservative Justice Hagedorn. What did he say about this ruling?
Yeah, it was very interesting, and I think unexpected that you saw not just the typical conservative liberal split on the court, but in fact, one of the most conservative members of the court, Brian Hagedorn, write a dissent in this case and split from his fellow conservatives. And one of the things that he emphasized in his run for the Supreme Court and has mentioned since is that the court is not supposed to be a legislature. You know, the court deals with interpretation of law. It doesn't make law. And running throughout his dissent was very much that point. He essentially was saying that the court overstepped its bounds. It was essentially engaged in judicial activism. And given that there were strong reasons just legally to consider the secretary's action as an order, so it could be an emergency, and even that the legislature itself didn't have standing to sue. In other words, it wasn't harmed directly since the legislature was the one who created the rules that gave the Department of Health Services emergency powers in the first place. Those sorts of legal issues, Justice Hagedorn said, are at the very minimum mixed enough that we should defer to the public health experts and those taking actions to address this crisis, given that, again, we're not a legislature, we're a court. So that was really his main point. And he, in fact, was quite pointed in criticizing his fellow conservatives in the majority throughout his dissent.
Which, of course, as you might imagine, they didn't really care for. How did they respond to these criticisms?
Yeah, another kind of interesting point here is that it's not always the case that all the justices will write for themselves. You know, sometimes there'll be a majority opinion, there might be a dissent that some justices join. But here, the justices were much more willing to speak for themselves, to have their own separate opinions. And in some of the concurring opinions, and essentially a concurring opinion is saying, you know, I agree with the majority, sign on pretty much totally, but I have some additional things to say. The justices in the majority use that opportunity to, number one, really attack the dissenters. In fact, Justice Kelly really went after Justice Hagedorn in a way that you might not expect two conservatives on the court to do, but much more pointed than you usually see in a judicial opinion. And also Justice Bradley, Rebecca Bradley, had a concurrence where she did get into those issues that I mentioned before, that balance between liberty and safety. She, you know, went kind of interestingly on this tour of a lot of American legal historical documents like the Federalist Papers and going back to the 18th century, 19th century, and brought up a lot of issues there that, you know, arguably went completely outside of this case, which is likely why it was a concurring opinion as opposed to in the majority opinion. But I found that interesting as well, because it was really a long statement that pressed a lot of the issues that I think some of the protesters we've seen around the country protesting these sorts of actions by government officials. It really echoed, I think, what a lot of those protesters have been arguing about.
Yeah, the response seemed distinctly political in a way. And just to, you know, go back to the case at hand here, what does the future of this case look like? Does it just end here?
The short answer is yes. It does end here. And the reason why it does is because the majority decided the case solely on state law. So it was that interpretation of whether this was a rule or an order was at the heart of this. That's a interpretation of state law. So I know that there probably are some questions about, well, could this be appealed to the federal courts? I mean, even up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And really the answer is no. Again, it's because it relies upon state law as opposed to federal law. So as far as Safer at Home goes, well, it's off the books. This is the end of the line as far as this particular case goes. It doesn't mean that it's the end of the line for Safer at Home on the town, city, and county level, though. As we've seen with Milwaukee County, Dane County, and a few others around the state that are electing to essentially adopt Safer at Home for their own communities. So that political battle will certainly continue. The legal battle, at least on these particular issues that the legislature had raised, those are pretty much over for right now.
So when it comes to a statewide order, it seems like that's done with.
That's right. Yeah. Well, this particular Safer at Home order anyway, as the majority even said, well, this doesn't necessarily say anything about the governor's power. You know, this was about the secretary's power. And there is still an opportunity to go through the rulemaking process, working with the legislature to address the issue, which of course takes time, and time is of the essence when you're talking about emergencies. So I think it's not necessarily the end of statewide action here, but it is the end of this particular safer at home order and the end of this specific case.
All right. Well, Paul Nollet, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing your work.
All right. Well, thanks for having me.
Paul Nollet is an associate professor and chair of the Department of Political Science at Marquette University. He spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers.